This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari America, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Hi there, hockey fans, and welcome back to RotoWire's signature NHL Hockey Pod podcast with Statsman and AJ. Friends, I'm Paul Bruno in Toronto, Ontario, and you can follow me as Statsman22. My co-host is AJ Scholes, who's a great follow at AJScholes24 in his new location in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. AJ, we have seen the start of the basketball season, and note that they have had a few blips with respect to the COVID-19 virus. Do you think the NHL is going to have a better outcome or worse? I certainly like the chances of success in Canada, where the infection rates have been significantly lower than the States, but wonder how you feel. There's going to be a little more travel than the teams were used to in the bubble, obviously, but I think they're doing everything to take the right precautions, and I'm optimistic that this is going to run fairly smoothly.
Well, I mean, I'm not quite as optimistic. There's inherently a risk whenever you have large groups of people gathering like that. We saw the Penguins had to cancel practice one day out of an abundance of caution. A bunch of players had to sit out a Columbus practice recently. Dallas, of course, is going to miss their first, I think, three games of the season after six players tested positive. Even up there in Canada, Vancouver had to cancel something in what turned out to be a false positive. So I think it's inevitable. We're going to have little blips. By all accounts, the NHL built a couple week, buffer towards the end of the season to get, these games in. So those Dallas games will probably be rescheduled for then. So it's inevitable, I think, until we have, NHL players and NBA players vaccinated, which I'm not encouraging. I think we should. They're probably some of the last people, right, that should be vaccinated. They're not essential workers by any means, but until we can get more of the general populace vaccinated, it's just not going to be, it's going to happen, and you just roll with the punches and make do with what you can, I think. And I think the league's done a good job with that.
Yeah, I think they have. And when I say I'm optimistic, it's that buffer at the end of the schedule that they've allowed for a couple of weeks to incorporate any games that get delayed. And you've already pointed out that a couple of teams have already faced that probability with early going so far. But it's that buffer that makes me feel optimistic. AJ, I'm also excited about a new sponsor that we have on board today, and I can't wait to hear more about Owner's Box. I'm excited to learn they're talking about a new way to play fantasy sports. Tell us all about it.
Absolutely. Owner's Box is here to reinvent the way you play fantasy sports this season. Owner's Box is not DFS. They are the first ever weekly fantasy sports platform that combines the best elements of the industry into one product. Owner's Box is a head-to-head elimination style format that keeps players engaged throughout live snake drafts, social interaction, and a new layer of strategy that allows you to become the ultimate fantasy GM. The best part about weekly fantasy sports is there's no long-term commitment. Users are able to draft a new team every single day and participate in different types of contests to keep the fantasy experience fresh and fun so you're never out of the game. Compete with your opponent over 7 days of fierce competition and get paid out weekly. No more falling subject to unfair payouts. as up to 50% of users win money. Owner's Box also allows users to brand themselves and engage socially across platform in multiple different ways, add friends, create custom leagues, and rank up to elevate the trash talk and competition to the next level. Think you got what it takes to be a weekly fantasy guru? Head over to ownersbox.com and start making a name for yourself today. In honor of the NHL season, if you sign up free now, Owner's Box will match your first deposit up to $500. What are you waiting for? Head over to ownersbox.com/rotowire to claim your bonus and join the new wave of fantasy sports.
I know what I'm doing right after our podcast, AJ. I'm checking this site out. This sounds really, really fun. So looking forward to getting involved in that. And thanks to our new sponsor, Owner's Box, for joining Statsman and AJ on the coverage of the hockey season this year. All right, AJ, we're into the final preseason division previews, and you finally get to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins eventually. And that's why this is going to be a three and a half hour show for anybody who's tuning in. Right, kidding, folks. We're going to hopefully put a noose around AJ after he gets past the 1 hour mark talking about his Penguins later on. But in any case, before we get there, we have to go in alphabetical order, so we're going to have to have him chomping at the bit for a little while before he gets to talk about his beloved club. The Boston Bruins are first up in this new configuration, and they have a couple of new faces, AJ, joining the fold. One of them could be pressed into service in a top six situation. That's Craig Smith, a right winger who's plied his trade for 9 years in Nashville. He's going to get a plum assignment as a top six winger in the early going because of injury concerns to one David Pasternak on the top line. Greg McHaig is a center who toiled in the Toronto minor league system for a few years, so I got to see him play a couple of cups of coffee with the Leafs. He's more of a bottom six type, but maybe a fourth line center possibility. In terms of the goaltending situation, familiar faces, AJ, there. Why don't you remind our listeners about the goalies and project the split that you might forecast?
Yeah, absolutely. If anybody's going to have a 50-50 split, it's for sure going to be Boston with Tuukka Rask and Yaroslav Halak. They pretty much did that last season. You know, Halak stepped in during the postseason because Rask opted out. So, you know, I think we'll see more of the same. Now, I will say if either of these guys has a sustained dip in production, I think they'll go with the other one. I don't think they're tied any one way or the other. But all things being equal, I think you'll see a 50-50 split. And one thing, you know, we were talking about the COVID situation. Boston was talking yesterday about how they are doing everything they can to keep Tuukka Rask and Yaroslav Halak as far away from each other as possible. So, and they cited, I believe it was the Chargers, who didn't have a quarterback after all their quarterbacks had to be held out due to various protocols and stuff. So they are trying to keep those two gentlemen as far away from each other as possible.
Yeah, I think that's something that most teams are going to practice this year because, like you said, you don't want to see a whole group of players from one position wiped out. It could be catastrophic if it was the goalies for any particular team. And these are veteran guys, Rask and Halak, both in their 30s. They know the drill, and you're probably almost on the nose, I think, with your prediction of 50-50. I could see Rask getting slightly more work just because it is a smaller schedule and these games do matter and you want to have your top guy in more a little more often. So I could see maybe 55-45, not quite 60-40, because they have really made it a concerted effort to rest Rask in advance of a playoff schedule, which will be busy, and that's when he'll get more work, maybe 70-30 or even 80-20 at the playoffs, should they roll around and make it to that plateau. AJ, the defense core here is really going to look different. One, Zdeno Chara flew the coop. He's signing with Washington, staying in this division, actually. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see him play multiple games against his former team. But it really leaves the Bruins lacking when you consider his departure and Torrey Krug signed on to greener pastures as well in free agency. We covered off his departure to St. Louis earlier. So the first pairing looks very different. It features Matt Grizzlick and Charlie McAvoy on the first pairing, Brandon Carlo and Jeremy Lauzon on the second pairing, And I think they're going to have to look for a guy to fill out the third line of defense. Kevin Miller is going to make the grade on the right side, but it's the left side where you could see one of three players fitting in. Jacob Sporl, John Moore, and Juro Vakanainen are the guys that I think are going to compete there. And I think they've got insurance coverage, too, in terms of depth. The guy who's had a couple of turns around with the Bruins is Connor Clifton. So they've got some names back there, but the key guy is going to be Charlie McAvoy, thrust into the power play quarterbacking role, something that he has never had full on before because of Krug's presence. And so I think he's the guy that has the big fantasy value here. But beyond that, they're looking for any others to contribute offensively. Maybe Matt Grzelcyk is the only other guy in my estimation. This is going to be a group that really has to batten down the hatches and fortify the defensive side of the game. And I think that's where the strength of this group might lie.
I totally agree. I think, you know, it's time for McAvoy, for lack of a better term, to put up or shut up. I mean, he's the top guy now in terms of the blue line here. And I think he needs to find a way to – his numbers are solid. He's got decent fantasy numbers in terms of point production, runs about 30 points a year. But that needs to be better if you're the number one guy on the top power play unit with guys like Marchand and eventually Pasternak and Bergeron. And so I think, you know, if he continues to be a 30-point producer, it's going to be a disappointing season for him because he's going to have every opportunity to rack up points. And I really think he's capable of having a career year, but I think he has to at this point if Boston's going to, you know, recover from some of those big losses. Speaking of Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron, they, as normal, will make up the top line there. Paul, you mentioned off the top David Pasternak is out. Now, Brad Marchand was dealing with an injury coming into camp, and now he did miss the scrimmage yesterday. So that gets a little bit concerning when games are right around the corner for them. But right now we still have Marchand pegged as a potential to play in that game. It sounds like it was more precautionary. He'll, as always, be with Patrice Bergeron. Now the right-hand side is where the big question mark comes in. We've seen a couple different combinations. Oscar Steen got a look there. Jack Studenick has been playing up there. It sounds like they're maybe inclined to go with one of these younger guys instead of somebody with a more veteran presence like a Craig Smith or an Andre Kasha. So, again, for now, we have Studenick in that spot. The next couple of days will be key here today and tomorrow in terms of morning skates and figuring out who's there. So, as we do always, look at that RotoWire depth chart. I mean, you're talking DFS value. The guy, whoever it is, playing with Marchand Bergeron, his salary probably not going to be very high, but he's going to have a good opportunity. So that's a guy to key in already, you know, for Wednesday's contest. Second line, you're looking at Jake DeBrust, David Krejci, and the aforementioned Andre Kasha. I think this is a pretty solid group. Craig Smith, as you said, top six potential here, could push. But I don't think DeBrust or Krejci is really going anywhere. They shouldn't face too many challenges. Nick Ritchie, Charlie Coyle, and Craig Smith making up the third line right now. A gritty scoring line is what I would call that. The couple of guys that I think are tougher but can also score. And then right now looks like Anders Bjork, Par Lindholm, and Chris Wagner making out the fourth line. But again, Trent Frederick, Sean Corrali, Oscar Steen, all guys who can make their presence known in the next couple of days. And of course, everything changes if Marchand doesn't play.
Look at you nailing Andre Kasha twice. That's that's a guy who's done some homework on the NHL pronunciation guide, folks, because that's one of the most mispronounced names that I hear on broadcasts regularly. And my partner just nailed it. So the first gold star already handed out very early in this show, AJ. Nice job with that one.
I mean, Paul, you know my last name is Scholes. And so for me, like, I look at that, the German pronunciation, I might even call him Kaza. Like, you know, that's how we would say it in German. You know, or as Americans, Case, Andre Case, but I've been doing my best and throwing that Kasha in there for you today.
Beautifully done. Beautifully done. Well, a key fantasy note that you brought out, though, is David Pasternak probably won't be ready to go until the first week of February. So he probably will be a couple of laps behind in terms of the league's leading goal scorers. But I still think he's a guy that you don't sleep on too long in your drafts. And he might be a guy that makes a difference for you if you draft him right in the right spot for your team to really pay off with his contributions. He's still one of the top snipers in the league, as everybody knows, but missing that first month, he'll be a little bit behind the likes of Matthews and maybe Ovechkin, to drop a couple other names that he competes with on an annual basis. Concerned a little bit about the center depth here, AJ, when you look at Bergeron and Krejci, they're in their mid-30s now, and I saw Bergeron lose maybe a half a step, and Krejci the same, so if that decline continues, that could be a further blow to this offense, I would suggest. Certainly, the key upside is where what happens to that first line right wing. If Studnika's the guy or Kasha, you got to look at those guys earlier on in your drafts than you might have projected them before, but don't overpay for them because Pasternak is coming. So that's a quandary for people that are looking at the Boston lineup right now. Marchand, when healthy, is one of the better scoring wingers, one of the more impressive playmaking wingers in the league, too. Jake DeBrusk is a guy I look to make the next step up. He could be a sleeper pick, I'll say. He might get a lot of looks on the first power play this year, and I think he's ready. He's been in the league 3-4 years now, ready to take that jump and be a frontline player for the Bruins going forward. They've been waiting on Nick Ricci to show the same, but he's more of a guy that's well suited to a bottom six type role and maybe first a top six insurance, so well situated there. The same thing can be said for Anders Bjork. I like the left side of the Bruins. You mentioned the right side could be a bit of a revolving door imperative. It's for people to look at the depth charts that that AJ works on with some of the guys in-house on a weekly basis, on a daily basis, actually, I should say, doing a great job. So if you're playing DFS, you got to know who's playing on the right side there with the top two centers on an ongoing basis. So have a look there on a regular turn. AJ, what about the next club, the Buffalo Sabres? New faces, there's a whole host of them. Taylor Hall, maybe the biggest name that they've added to play with Jack Eichel. That's going to be a pretty nice dynamic duo. He's there on a one-year deal, looking to attract more viewers to his situation at the end of the season, maybe more suitors who might be inclined to get him on a longer-term deal. But he's betting on himself in a one-year turn with Eichel. I think that's going to be dynamic pairing. Tobias Reeder is a guy who's bounced around a little bit, has an offensive upside. I wonder where he's going to fit in. We'll get to that depth chart shortly up front. They've made a whole host of additions on the blue line, featuring Matt Irwin primarily, Eric Staal, Cody Eakin, Steve Fogarty in terms of center depth. They're going to be battling for position. Riley Sheehan, a veteran who's bounced around, played some center, played some right wing. And then Arttu Ruusulainen is a guy who's coming over from the Finnish league last season. He's a right winger who's going to compete for a job over here too. But before we look at the defense and forwards, why don't you walk us through a couple of veteran goalies here? Maybe the weakest goalie tandem in this division, I'll say that up front.
Absolutely. And so I think it'll be Linus Ullmark carrying the bulk of the workload. I could see him creeping up to, 55, maybe 60% of the starts. Carter Hutton taking the rest. But I wouldn't even rule out Jonas Johansson getting a couple looks here, too. That I would say this is probably a revolving door situation. And especially, I think the fact that you're going to have a third goalie on your taxi squad, now you still have to call him up into the squad, but if you carry 22 guys instead of 23 on your regular squad and you're just moving a few guys in and out of the taxi squad as needed, they could certainly have Johansson up from the taxi squad and start a game because he's going to be practicing with the team on a regular basis. So I just don't think it's really solidified who's going to be the full-time guy here in Buffalo. I lean towards Linus Ullmark at the onset here because he seems to be the one that they're going to rely on. The Carter Hart kind of experiment hasn't really worked out. He hasn't taken over really as a true number one here. So why not give Johansson a couple looks from time to time?
Yeah, AJ, I think that Johansson probably has to be looked at as the goalie of the future here, and maybe the future is creeping up faster than Hutton and Ullmark would like, so that's the threat to their roles here. I think if one or the other falters, Johansson gets the call-up quickly in this season, because I think this is an area where the Sabres trail the rest of the division, and they're going to want to do what they can to fortify it as best as they can do it. In terms of the defense, there's a couple of Rasmuses that will lead the offensive production as they have the last couple of seasons. That's Rasmus Dahlin, who was the first overall draft a couple of years ago. Rasmus Ristolainen is a big, rangy guy who also has an offensive upside. And a year ago, he was the subject of a lot of trade rumors, but I think the Sabres were well served by keeping him in the fold and maintaining two really solid offensive options on the back end. They're going to be partnered with Jake McCabe and Brandon Montour, who are more defensive specialists in the top four of this defense corps. Colin Miller's a guy who's got a lot of skills. We keep recalling the fact that he dominated in the American Hockey League All-Star competitions, in the skill competitions there, and that's maybe still his claim to fame as a pro hockey player. Henry Jokiharju is a guy who's bounced around the league too a little bit, and those guys are going to fill in the bottom pairing here. Matt Irwin may threaten for some ice time. Casey Nelson is a little nicked up. He's another guy with some NHL experience, so they go eight deep in terms of having NHL depth. Quality experience, depth, I might say, of some, I won't say high quality, but decent NHL presence. So defense is more of a stronger suit than the goaltending situation, in my opinion.
I absolutely agree, and you hit the nail on the head with the Rasmuses. I will clarify, Casey Nelson opted out of the season, so he won't be back at any point here. And so, yeah, I think even with that, though, they've got some decent depth. I like a guy like a Will Borgen, played 61 games for the Americans last season, 11 points over that stretch. So he's another one that I think could challenge for a bottom, you know, that bottom pairing. I don't expect, unless there's an injury, I don't expect we'll see any changes at any point to the top four here. I think all those guys are pretty locked into their roles. As to the forward complement, you mentioned Taylor Hall and Jack Eichel on the top line. Here's your DFS guy to watch out for. Again, Tage Thompson on the right wing. I think that spot is tenuous at best. I think there's any number of players who could push for that spot, and so you are definitely going to want to watch that. Victor Olofsson, Eric Staal, and Sam Reinhart make out the second line. I think this is a really quality second line because they were able to shore up the center position here. They just didn't have anybody to consistently play center. For them, I get Eric Staal's a little, you know, he's on the back half of his career, to say the least. But I think he's still capable of being a second line center. And I think this will be a rough pairing for a lot of teams in this division to match up against. The third line has some intrigue in its own right. You mentioned Tobias Reeder, Cody Eakin, and then Kyle Okposo playing on the other side. Here's another spot where you could mix and match here. I think what's most interesting about that third line combination is what it meant for the fourth line. They had Jeff Skinner playing on the fourth line at their most recent practice. Dylan Cousins potentially is going to come off World Juniors and slot into a fourth line role here. We'll see. I think he's, you know, benefit of playing in World Juniors, he's just been playing like competitive hockey at a very high level, not NHL level by any means, but he comes off playing competitive hockey. He should be fit and ready to go, but he's also behind the eight ball in terms of team concepts, because with the quarantine period, you know, he just started practicing with the team. So I think it's hit or miss here on whether or not he'll hold on to that spot. Curtis Lazar is going to have something to say about that, certainly. And then right now on the right-hand side, we have Riley Shahan, who just converted his PTO into a full-time deal with them, just signed the other day. But, you know, there's Casey Mittelstadt could still be in the mix. Another Rasmus, this time Asplin, is another guy. So I think there's some intriguing combinations here that could be moving around. Why not, if they needed to, why not put Skinner on the top line, move him over to the right and play with Hall and Eichel if you really need a goal or something. So it'll be interesting to see how these stabilize. I think the only things you can say for certain are that Hall and Eichel will play together the entire year barring any injuries. I can't imagine that duo being split up at any time.
And one key injury that we have to mention is Zemgus Girgensons lost to this team for the whole season with a hamstring injury that has already got him pegged to miss the entire campaign. So a tough blow. He figured to be a top six guy and might have been a candidate even for that first line right wing playing on his offside. They're that desperate to fill that role. I think you don't sleep on a guy like Kyle Okposo. He's on the books for big dollars, and he's got two years beyond this one at $6 million per. So he's got to get his act together and might take advantage of that situation on the right side to try and grab that first line role and rehabilitate his career. Jeff Skinner, $9 million a year, AJ, I think is the stipend. One of the worst long-term albatrosses of any contract for any player around the NHL. I don't know what happened to this guy. He fell right off the face of the earth in terms of offensive production. And as you say, he's listed right now, fourth liner on the depth chart, but could be an interesting flyer that you take at the end of your draft if he gets his act together and rediscovers that earlier form. Could be a real steal. So maybe that's where you go with a guy like him. Dylan Cousins, high-end offensive piece on the recently completed World Juniors for Team Canada. I think the future is bright for him, but just might not happen this year. But if I was him, I'd spend a lot of time with Eichel and Staal and learn what I can to go along the learning curve and make the best of a situation that he has here, learning from two quality veteran centers. Eric Staal, I think, has a fine addition here, well-suited to a second-line role, and could help get the most out of Reinhardt and Olofsson on a very intriguing second line here. I really like that unit. Of course, we'll have to see how productive Eichel and Hall can be as the top pairing here, and they figure to go early in drafts and could really play well off one another. I think Eichel's got to be excited. That's probably the best player he's ever played with in terms of his short NHL career in the league. Now, let's look next at the New Jersey Devils. This is a team that has some new faces, but was dealt a bit of a blow. One of the new faces was Corey Crawford, AJ, in goal to hopefully solidify the net mining situation. But he abruptly retired last week. There were some injury concerns that dogged him the last couple of years, and maybe the move to New Jersey, he felt, maybe this is not for me right now. I've got the cups on my resume. I've had a nice career. Maybe it's time to just pack it in and go away. So unfortunate situation for the Devils there. We'll look forward to your assessment of their goalie tandem in a sec. Andreas Johnsson is a guy who comes over from the Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs were going to be tight against the cap, and he was a casualty in that regard. I think he's going to be happy to find himself playing in a top six situation in New Jersey. The talent is lacking. It's not going to be the same depth as what he had in Toronto, obviously, but for him personally, I think it's a good situation to become almost a centerpiece of this offense right off the bat. Joining him in terms of new faces, a couple of guys on the defense, Ryan Murray and Dmitry Kulikov. Both of these guys have bounced around the NHL a little bit, and Kulikov is the guy I think you're going to have higher expectations than Murray, but I think both of them will factor into the top six on the defense. But before we go there, tell us what's going on in the Nets. How are they going to get around the fact that Corey Crawford is not joining Mackenzie Blackwood?
Yeah, I think it means we're going to see an uptick in split here for Blackwood. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I would have told you, maybe Corey Crawford 55, Blackwood 45% of the starts, maybe trending a little bit higher for Corey Crawford, depending on performance. But now I think at this point, you got to look at Blackwood potentially taking closer to 60, maybe even 65. I wouldn't personally have a lot of confidence in Scott Wedgwood at this point. You know, last time he was in the NHL was the 2017-18 season, played in 20 games. For the Coyotes, went 5-9-4 with a 3.45 goals against average. That's not somebody that instills a lot of confidence for me as being the backup. And even if you look at his numbers last year in the minors, they weren't that much better. 26 games played for Syracuse, 13-8-2 with a 3.01 goals against average. It's just not that great. I mean, to be blunt about it. He's rarely had a save percentage that's been that high. Now, I will say he did have a previous cup of coffee with the Devils, and, you know, those four games he looked good, a .957 save percentage. So maybe playing in New Jersey just suits him better than anywhere else. But I wouldn't feel real confident about that. So for me, I would expect Blackwood to see closer to 60, maybe 65% of the starts now that Corey Crawford is no longer available.
And that's going to be good for his development, because I think this is one of the better up-and-coming goalies that we have in the NHL. He's going to be challenged, though, because this is a team that's up against it. And you mentioned the backup situation really doesn't help him. He's going to be forced to play more games than maybe that the Devils management would like. So if you're looking for a guy who gets a lot of goalie starts, Mackenzie Blackwood could be among the league leaders, but the numbers may be not so high in terms of the win total here. And that's because of the rest of the roster. There's not a lot of depth, and when we look at the defense, we highlight some of that deficiency. Ryan Murray, as I said, bounced around, had difficulty playing top 4 minutes anywhere in his prior stops, but he's pegged to get a shot there alongside P.K. Subban, a guy whose career has gone south in the last couple of seasons, despite the big ticket that he's linked to as well in terms of salary, not delivering to that salary in terms of his production in the last couple of seasons, hoping for a bounce-back campaign. He's going to get every opportunity to be the power play quarterback here, quite simply because other than Damon Severson, who is on a second pairing, there's not many other options to consider. You might throw in Will Butcher and Sami Vatanen into the mix, but they're more lower end, although they do have better offensive upside than defensive upside. And that's really the a concern when you link up the depth on defense and the deficiency in goal that we already sorted out. This team is up against it because I don't think they have the firepower to offset the fact that it is looking to me like a defensively deficient group on the defenseman list here. AJ, how do you assess this defense group?
Well, I think there's potential here. It just hasn't worked out. And I'll start with talking about Will Butcher, who every season has seen his numbers decline. He had a really strong rookie campaign. Numbers dropped off the year after, which, okay, sophomore slump, whatever. You kind of chalk it up to that. But then last year's numbers again dipped. And more so than just, you know, because of the shortened season. The production just wasn't there. And so it's really disappointing. So there's potential there in him if the extra time off or something has him in a place. I think he's capable of getting back to being in a regular season a 40-point producer. So maybe this year you're looking at 20, but there hasn't been anything to instill a ton of confidence in that. And then Ty Smith is a player to watch. I mean, 59 points in 46 games last year in the WHL with Spokane, 69 points the year before, 73 the year before that. So talk about a guy with potential. There's a reason he was selected 17th overall back in 2018. Can he make the jump? That's the big question there. And that's a big jump. You know, they've got him in right now as second pairing with Damon Severson. And that would be a significant jump to go straight from juniors to the NHL. But it's certainly possible. So there's potential here, whether everybody lives up to it. You know, P.K. Subban has had numbers in the past where he's been one of the top defensemen in the league. So potential is how I round out this group. And I think that applies in a lot of ways to the forward complement as well. You've got Nikita Gusev, Jack Hughes, and Kyle Palmieri, it looks like, will take the first line role. This will be a move up for Hughes. Last year, they kind of insulated him a little bit in having him play further down the lineup, which I think is the right choice. But with, you know, Nico Hischier's been unavailable due to a leg injury. And latest reports, he isn't even skating yet. So I think he's probably going to miss opening night, maybe the first week or two at this point. So Hughes gets the first line assignment. Andreas Johnsson, who you mentioned, a lot of potential in him to really get, get going a little bit more after his time in Toronto. Travis Zajac centers that line, and Jasper Bratt on the right-hand side. A couple of youngsters come in on the third line. Miles Wood on the left. Nathan Bastian looks like a player that could make the roster here based on the cuts yesterday. Hasn't really had much NHL experience, just 7 games back in 2018-19. But he scored 3 goals in those 7 games, so certainly a strong opening salvo into the NHL level. And then Jani Kukkonen or Brent Senni, maybe on your fourth line. Jesper Bockqvist, and again, Yeager Sharangurov. I'm sure that's not right. I will have to double-check that one. But he's a player that's been primarily overseas, had a loan stint at the start of the year with Dynamo Minsk, and got 17 goals and 8 assists in those 34 games to start the year. So he came into camp playing at a high level from some KHL time. So there's plenty of players to watch. And you know, this might be a team where if you're in a dynasty league or a keeper league or something, this is where you could maybe try and make some high-risk moves to stash a few of these guys or pick them up and see if anything happens, especially if you're already looking at this season and you're like, I'm not winning this year at all. Maybe look to the Devils and see if there's some guys here that would fit into, you know, your future plans for your team.
No question. There's a bunch of youngsters here and a couple of guys that come over from the KHL. Yegor Sharangovich was the name that you were trying to pronounce. I think I got a little closer to the actual pronunciation. Not saying mine's perfect either, but we'll go with that. Sharangovich is a guy who played in the KHL last year, and he got double digits in scoring goals, maybe half a goal every game is how it measured out, or a goal every two games if you want to look at it that way in the KHL. So he's a guy that is a depth option here that you projected. Palmieri and Bratt are the experienced hands on the right side. I like their depth at center, AJ, particularly if Heischer can get his health in order. I think that's a pretty good 1-4 with him, Jack Hughes, Travis Zajac, and Pavel Zacha. Zajac probably very well suited as a second-line center. I always like to see a good guy, a puck distributor. For me, David Krejci's a guy that we talked about already. He kind of is the mold for the second line pivot that I look for. A guy who's defensively responsible, but can move the puck around to wingers who have some offensive upside. And you certainly can see that with Bratt and Johnson. So that could be a surprise, a sleeper unit, I'll say. One from left to right, that whole trio could be interesting late round picks in your dynasty or regular season, full season pools. Miles Wood, Pavel Zacha, and Nathan Bastian, an uninspiring third line, really. But Zacha is the skill guy that could drive the unit and maybe raise the level. A rising tide lifts all boats, they say, and it'll be up to Zacha to be the guy that does that. Boqvist, kind of an insurance option, so should one of the top four guys get hurt, that's the only way I see him getting a lot of ice time, but another guy who's got some skill to his game as well. All in all, though, the Devils figure to be a bottom feeder in this division. I'll tip my hand early in terms of showing our listeners what I think about this club when you compare it to the rest of the division. And one of the teams that will be competing for a playoff spot, no question, is the New York Islanders. And they're buoyed by the arrival, finally, of one Ilya Sorokin to bolster their goaltending situation. The only other addition of note is Dmytro Timoshov, a Leaf farmhand from the last couple of seasons. He does have a good upside offensively, a fast skater, albeit not the biggest guy in the world, but he could challenge for third line, maybe even second line offense here. We'll see how it unfolds in terms of the depth chart now. But we begin with the goalie situation and Sorokin. How does he fit into the tandem here? Do you expect that he'll get the lion's share, or will he be splitting the role with the one guy that returns?
Well, I don't see how you can pay Semyon Varlamov, you know, $5 million to not still be your starter. Although, you know, Montreal is paying Jake Allen $4.5 million. Looks like the Golden Knights are going to pay Fleury to be the backup at $7 million. So maybe my assumption of money kind of dictating that is a little off. But I imagine he'll at least get half of the starts, maybe a little bit more. A lot of it's going to depend on the development side here for Sorokin. Like, this is a guy that's played top quality teams over in the KHL. It's not like he's playing, you know, in some, you know, bad league before coming over here. So he certainly is capable and has shown that, but there's some differences to the NHL game. And one of that is rink size. It's obviously condensed. So can he adjust? It's going to, you know, a smaller rink means different angles and stuff like that. Playing the puck is a completely different game with a smaller rink size. So how can he handle that transition? So I think you'll see Varlamov at about 55, Sorokin 45, but if he comes in and just dominates, I think he could take over eventually. But at least the first month or two here, I expect Varlamov to see a slight edge in starts.
And they have a third guy in there in the mix, in Corey Schneider, a veteran guy who's there on a PTO, AJ. And I wonder if things don't work out for him there, New Jersey might come and call on him. They need a guy with a beating heart to bolster their netminding, as we said. But an intriguing tandem with Barlamov and Sorokin. I think all eyes are on him, Sorokin, that is, to be a candidate for Rookie of the Year. If he gets the traction that a lot of people expect, he could be that good. But I think it's a capable pairing for sure, one that rates among the better groups of goalies in this division and maybe in the entire league if Sorokin does reach the level that people expect him to. Varlamov, as a more of a proven commodity, as you suggested, and his contract status and the return of $5 million a year on a cap salary cap hit, reflective of that. So their backstopping situation in good hands, and really in front of them is a defensive group that is really noted for their acumen on the defensive side of the puck, not so much offensively, but maybe the best of the lot is Ryan Pulock, a guy who's improved steadily on the offensive side throughout his career. He's one of the better shutdown defensemen as well, so pretty good package there all in one. And he's got his longtime partner, Adam Pellick, to look forward to another season. They're one of the better lockdown pairings in the NHL when healthy, and they both had their concerns in the past. Nick Leddy's a guy who used to be among the league leaders in terms of scoring capabilities from the back end, kind of tailed off a little bit the last couple of seasons, but does retain some of that offensive upside and could be still penciled in as a power play quarterback on the second unit behind Pulock, who figures to get the role in the first line of the power play. A guy who's going to threaten both of them eventually is Noah Dobson, I think, but right now he's still insulated on the third pairing alongside veteran Andy Green. Scott Mayfield rounds out this six-pack, and I think it's one of the better 1-6s in this division. Sebastian Aho, an experienced hand, and offering insurance as a seventh defenseman in this mix, AJ.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with all of that, Paul. I really think there's some options for four spots here for a few fantasy points, but I guess I'm not. You don't look at that D and go, oh, there's your guy that's going to put up a bunch of points, right? You know, they're a little unnamed in that sense and in terms of accolades and stuff. But look, Barry Trotz is the coach here. So these guys are not going to be giving up a lot of goals that he runs a tight ship there. So I definitely expect them to do their job and to be solid for the team. But there isn't any wow factor for this group, in my opinion. In terms of the forwards, that's a little bit different. We've got some guys that can provide that wow factor, and it starts with their newly re-signed Matthew Barzal right at the top center with that 3-year, $21 million deal. So he's finally making some big bucks. Now, you have to wonder what his first couple of games are going to look like since he wasn't able to practice with the team until he signed that contract, but I wouldn't imagine it'll have too much impact because he's going to be playing with guys he's used to playing with, and Anders Lee and Jordan Eberle. Again, this is a first line that I really think can put up some solid points. They'll create matchup problems for a number of teams, I think. But they're just, they're not star studded. I'll put it that way. Matthew Barzal, I think, is becoming that and should get more accolades around this league. But, they're underappreciated, I think, in most circles. So second line, Anthony Beauvillier, Brock Nelson, and Josh Bailey. I like to call this a triple B line. Again, I think all these guys know each other well, and I think that's going to benefit them. I'm a strong proponent of keeping lines together and letting guys gel, and these guys did so last year, and I think can continue to put up solid numbers. They might have one of the deepest center groups in the league with Jean-Gabriel Pageau anchoring the third line. Michael Dalcol looks like he'll be the third line left wing. And then Oliver Wahlstrom is a guy who's looking like he's going to get an opportunity. But those two I would consider tenuous at best. Matt Martin, Casey Cizikas, and Cal Clutterbuck rounding out the fourth line. But look, Dmytro Timoshov, who you talked about at the top, Ross Johnson, Leo Komarov, all of these guys are not here to sit on their hands, and they will be pushing for bottom six roles. But I really don't see anybody challenging the top six here. I think that six-pack is pretty solid, and it would likely take an injury for anybody else to replace one of those guys.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that assessment. I think my concern here on the top line is Anders Lee's regression. He's 2 years removed from a 40-goal campaign, but the point totals have slipped in each of the last couple of seasons. He's going to look to reverse that trend, and he's got a great shot as long as he continues to get the assignment alongside Barzal, one of the more dynamic pivots in the NHL. And Jordan Eberle, for me, still one of the guys who I value his hockey IQ. This guy sees the game very well, and I think he gets the most out of his skill, and a heady player that is a pretty good foil for Barzal in terms of the offensive game, and a pretty defensively responsible type as well. Beauvillier, Brock Nelson, and Bailey, you've assessed them very well. I think this is a very nice second line. Brock Nelson, a goal scorer at center, instead of a second line center who's more of a playmaker. He's a shooter, this guy, but Bailey is more the playmaker on the second pairing, one of the better playmaking wingers in the NHL, and Beauvillier is emerging as a top scoring threat as well. And that's why this six pack, you assess them very accurately. There's not a lot of room for the people below them to crack this unit unless there's an injury. And I think the Islanders will trust them to deliver enough offense when you consider the defensive structure that this team is all about. Pressure's on these guys, and the value is there in terms of DFS and those six names. The guys that will threaten for more ice time if injuries do crop up are Jean-Gabriel Pageau at center, a very nice fit there, a dynamic guy who can take over should one of the other guys falter. Michael Dalcoli is a guy who was formerly a high draft pick by the Islanders, and he's slowly coming into his own. Big, speedy guy with some skill, and I think that he is a guy, if not for the steady production of Lee and Beauvillier, he might threaten for a top 6 minutes, but if either of those guys falter, I could see him getting a look there. Matt Martin's on the club with the club on a PTO. He's a fourth liner at best, but I've heard that they're going to throw big money at him. They really value the police element that he brings to this group, and alongside Cizikas and Clutterbuck, one of the more interesting, fun fourth lines to watch because they hit everything that moves when they're all together. AJ, that's one thing that I look at. If you're in a deep league or in a dynasty league that includes physicality, you want to include one of these three guys in your mix because they do mix it up better than most other players in the league who don't hit as much. Ross Johnson, Leo Komarov are depth options on the right wing. Neither one of them really a threat to light up the scoreboard, but could be, as I said, a depth or insurance option should anybody get hurt on the right flank. I would trust Leo Komarov more than Johnson, but neither one a big offensive producer. The next team up is full of offensive producers, AJ, and one of them is a recent draft. He was number one in the draft, and that's Alexis Lafreniere of the New York Rangers. A lot of people are expecting big things from him right out of the chute, and really feel that the Rangers got a very large break with the draft lottery and the number one pick falling to them, and they get this guy. Almost doesn't seem fair. They also added some pieces on the back end and in goal. Jack Johnson, Anthony Buteto, a couple of experienced defensemen. Kevin Rooney, a veteran, a bottom six type center. Colin Blackwell, the same applies to him. Keith Kincaid, more of a backup option in the nets. So they've added everywhere and continue to fortify a team that's kind of done their makeover rebuild on the fly, AJ. What about their goalie situation going forward? No Henrik Lundqvist. And while we mention him, we got to say we're happy to hear that he had a heart surgery recently. And while he won't be playing in the NHL this year, he was signed by the Caps. He won't be playing, but we understand that the surgery went well, and we offer up our support for a complete recovery there, but wonder if we've seen the last of King Henrik in the league. What can you say about the goalies that will replace him in the Nets this year?
Yeah, absolutely. I think has somebody checked on Braden Holtby? We've had three long-time NHL guys who spent 10 years or so in the league with one team that all made moves, and two of them aren't going to play this year now between Crawford and Lundqvist. So somebody check on Braden Holtby, make sure he's doing okay here. In terms of the net mining for the Rangers, you got Igor Shesterkin, I think will be the main starter for them, and then Alexander Georgiev will be the backup option. I think you'll look at about a 60-40 split for them. I don't expect Kincaid to see any games unless somebody comes up with an injury. He'll essentially be around. I think, the nice part, again, the taxi squad makes some unique situations. You've got two young goalies who could probably use a veteran to lean on, and they'll stick Kincaid on the taxi squad, so he'll be around the team. He'll practice with the team. And I think that's going to be great for their development. I expect Keith Kincaid essentially is going to be an extra goalie coach for them this year, and somebody that they can kind of talk to. So I think it's great for the team when you have these two youngsters that are, you know, really just coming into the NHL for the most part. So, yeah, I think Shesterkin 60, Georgiev 40 will be the breakdown here.
Yeah, you know what? And you got to tip your hat to the Rangers. They didn't get these guys as 18, 19-year-old guys. They scouted them, and they plucked them out of the KHL over the last couple of seasons. And both of them are in their early 20s, but plenty of experience. And so they come to the NHL as an experienced tandem now that they're here together. And I think the goaltending situation is in very capable hands and should be for the next several years with these two young, dynamic types in the nets. And it's a far different look from Henrik Lundqvist, who was getting a little long in the tooth in his late 30s. But I think the foreseeable future in the nets is very bright in on Broadway. And in front of them, they've got some intriguing talent when you consider the likes of Adam Fox, Jake Trouba handling a lot of the offensive upside on the right side of the defense, and Anthony DeAngelo, probably the power play quarterback, is the first guy on the depth chart on the left side of the defense. So three quality offensive pieces dot the Rangers depth chart from the defensive standpoint. That's a bit of a luxury compared to some of the other teams in this division, and these three should all be considered draftable options in your season-long leagues, and certainly depending on the matchups in terms of nightly DFS play as well. Ryan Lindgren rounds out the second pairing, more a defensive specialist. Keandre Miller is a guy who has a bit of a ways to go before he qualifies as an experienced defenseman. He's getting his maiden voyage in the NHL, but a lot is expected of him, and maybe he becomes a fourth offensive piece. But right now, it looks like he's going to get a third pairing, insulated kind of role alongside Brendan Smith, a guy who's a very smooth skater, but not known for his offensive game. So 1 through 6, pretty good quality on the Rangers defense, and ably supported when you consider they've got Jack Johnson penciled in as the number 7 guy in terms of the depth chart on the blue line. It's in good hands in New York.
Yeah, I can't talk about Keandre Miller enough. Like, look, you got a guy from St. Paul, Minnesota, who crossed enemy lines to play for the University of Wisconsin. You know, not a lot of guys make that trip across the Mississippi. Phil Kessel went the other way, so we at least got Keandre Miller here in Wisconsin. Two solid seasons at the U here. 22 games in 26 in his rookie year, 18 points in 36 games this last season. And so I definitely think capable of being an offensive piece for them. And I'm really looking forward to watching his career continue to develop. For the forward complement here, we've got Chris Kreider, Mika Zibanejad, and Pavel Buchnevich on the top line. Pretty similar group of guys here. Not a lot of difference from what you've seen in the past. The question mark right now, at least in terms of opening night, is Zibanejad. He was back at practice, but he did confirm that he had missed the start of camp after testing positive for COVID-19. And so he's questionable to play Thursday. You know, I also cover soccer here for RotoWire, and we've seen a lot of this where guys are cleared to come back to practice, but it takes a while for them to get their full fitness back up and game speed ready. So they sometimes will miss a few games even after they're able, to return to practice. So Zibanejad is day to day questionable for Thursday. But in terms of the season long outlook, it shouldn't have much of an impact. I would expect if he misses a game, it'll be one, maybe two at most. Second line, Artemi Panarin right now, anchored by Ryan Strome in the middle and Kaapo Kakko on the right-hand side. Talk about some luxuries. You mentioned Lafreniere at the start, and now you've got I would love, honestly, I don't know how you do it because, you know, you're obviously not going to bump Panarin down, but who wouldn't love to see, like, Kakko and Lafreniere on the same line? I think that would be really exciting. But for now, they'll be split up. Lafreniere starts third line left side, Philip Chito in the middle, and Julien Gauthier on the right, kind of an unknown youngster pushing for more opportunities here. got a few games between Carolina and the Rangers last year, 17, had three assists, really minimal ice time, just a little bit over 8 minutes a game. So he'll be looking for more opportunities, no doubt, this season. And then your fourth line rounds out right now, Brendan Lemieux, Kevin Rooney, and Morgan Barron. But Brett Howden, obviously, Phil DiGiuseppe, and even Tim Geithner could all compete for minutes here. So it'll be interesting to see whether Zibanejad plays on Thursday. But there's a lot to like here in terms of both established scoring guys like Buchnevich and Panarin, Kreider, and then some youngsters who are just starting out or have had just a few games in the league. And so I love this team, and I think they're going to be dangerous very quick. I think we'll talk about this in a couple minutes, but the just competition in this division is going to make it really tough for the Rangers to get anywhere, but they are not going to be an easy out by any stretch of the imagination.
No, I don't think you want to play run and gun with this offense, AJ, is what you're leading me to think, and I agree with that assessment. When you talk about Artemi Panarin, he is underrated in terms of top 10 players in this league, I still think, even though he's well-regarded. He's such a dynamic force, one of the top scorers in the last couple of seasons, and that alone is going to promote scoring from the likes of Ryan Strome and Kaapo Kakko on that second line. I look for Kaapo Kakko to make a real leap here in terms of scoring on points per game over what he did in his rookie campaign. He got his feet wet now, and I think there's a lot of skill there. You're going to see him take that next step, and I think I don't want to say he's a sleeper because everybody knows that he's a top prospect, but he's a guy I think you can suggest will have a big leap in terms of his scoring over what he did last season. And the guy that benefits is the guy in the middle, Ryan Strome, a very good playmaking center. Like I said, that's what I like in the second liners. And when you got a chance to play with Panarin and Kakko, you got uber skill on your left and on your right. I think it could be a big year for that group. Zibanejad emerged as one of the top goal scorers in the NHL last year, and so don't underrate that aspect of his game, but he's still a very capable playmaking center and will get the chance to apply that ability with two capable scorers on his wings. Chris Kreider, one of the fastest big men in the league, and Pavel Buchnevich might be the fastest of the three. So very nice, good-looking top six. Lafreniere, Keitel, and Julien Gauthier make up the third line. And Gauthier might be the guy that is a sleeper pick here when you consider the quality of players that he's been playing with. I'd rate him as a true sleeper option, and if he holds on to that third-line role, could really benefit his owners this season. Now we move on to the bottom three in this division in terms of the alphabetical order. We're getting close to your club, AJ. Hold on there. We got one more to get through. Your arch rivals, the Philadelphia Flyers, are up next. They really made a lot of moves in the offseason, focusing on their defensive depth, which kind of had me scratching my head because I liked their defense before. But you throw in Erik Gustafsson, Derek Pouliot, Chris Bigras, and Tyler Witherspoon, and Nate Prosser, all guys who have had some experience in the NHL, the first two guys particularly. That's going to be a formidable defensive group. We'll get to them in a sec, but the guys in the Nets have to be thrilled about that. And Carter Hart seems to have solved that longtime goalie riddle in Philadelphia. It's no longer viewed as a bit of a black hole, but now it looks like really one of the strengths of this club with him and Elliott 1-2 in the depth chart.
Absolutely. And so this one's a little tricky. Like, I think Carter Hart, based on his talent and his ability, I could see him pushing for 65% of the starts, maybe even creeping up a little bit more than that. But they have an established veteran in Brian Elliott. I don't know that they want to just, you know, after one season as good as it was, or two seasons rather, but as good as last year was, I don't think they necessarily want to just throw Hart to the wolves at this point when you have a guy like Brian Elliott to be the number two. So I think I'm going to say 65 on the high side. It might be closer to 60-40 just because you have an established veteran. I think that speaks more about Brian Elliott and his ability, and the fact that it maybe doesn't make sense if you don't have to just throw Carter Hart out there every single night. So 60-40 is what I'm projecting here for a split. But again, it could go higher depending on how Hart manages the workload.
And we know that he made a breakthrough last season, having a really all-star caliber campaign. That's one thing. But Brian Elliott even turned in a good effort with a sub-3 goals against average. So that's an exciting tandem to have in Philadelphia. And the Nets, maybe the best quality they had in the Nets for, even I'll go out on a limb and say 30 years, AJ. It's been that long that they have looked at a goalie pairing like that and can view it really as almost a big strength of this team. But for me, the highlight of this Flyers roster is the defense. 1 through 6, I think this is the best six-pack in the Eastern Conference, AJ. I'll say that. And when you consider Ivan Provorov, Philip Myers, Travis Sanheim, three guys who are all capable of lighting it up offensively, particularly Provorov. Shane Gostisbehere is a couple of years removed from being one of the top offensive guys in the league, and he can be swept up just by association with these guys to rehab what has been flagging fortunes for him in the last two seasons. But he's going to get a chance to reprise the role as a top-line defenseman here alongside Provorov. That's a great place for him to start to get his house in order. Gustafsson, to me, the most intriguing addition in the offseason, is a couple of years removed from having a 60-point campaign himself. So really, 1 through 6, when you throw in Robert Hagg, they have six guys who are capable offensive contributors, but three of them are very exciting when you consider Provorov, Gostisbehere if he turns it around, and Gustafsson. So I love the makeup of this defense on the offensive side of the puck particularly.
The biggest thing about adding Gustafsson, in my opinion, is that it allows them to have a very tight leash on Gostisbehere. And if things aren't going well like they were last season, I think you will see those two flip spots very quickly in terms of the pairings. And you have a couple of guys, you know, we saw this last year. Gostisbehere had a few games where he was sitting in the press box, wasn't in the lineup, and Justin Braun and Mark Friedman are capable players who could step into the bottom pairing here if they feel like they need to sit Gostisbehere down. So I think there's really some quality depth here, and I agree. I think they really added to it as well in terms of offseason work. In terms of forwards, Oscar Lindbaum, after missing time last year after being diagnosed with cancer, he is back and available and projects as their first line left winger, which I think is a really great spot for him. It'll benefit the team that they don't have all their eggs in one basket, as it were. So you'll have Lindblom on the top line with Sean Couturier and Travis Konecny. And then Claude Giroux moves to the second line. He'll play with Kevin Hayes and Joel Farabee. Kevin Hayes is a player that I think needs to maybe have I don't want to call it a rebound year, because his numbers last year weren't bad. He had another 40-point campaign, but I think they were hoping maybe closer to 55, like he did the year before. But certainly a couple of solid years. He had a slump. I think that's more what you're looking at. He had a pretty extended slump there for a while. And so getting him back to maybe more consistency and avoiding that is what they're looking for. And then in terms of their third line center, look, it's a guy we have not seen in a long time that we've talked about a lot in this club in years past, is Nolan Patrick. By all accounts, he is back and available and going to be on the ice after dealing with extended concussion-related symptoms. He's the third line center here with James Van Riemsdyk and Jakub Voracek, which I think is a great spot for him. You're talking about a guy who hasn't played in a very long time. And so having him insulated in the third line role, and honestly, I don't know that he would really push a Kevin Hayes or Sean Couturier for minutes anyway. So it's probably where he would land regardless. Fourth line, Michael Raffel, Scott Laughton, and Nicholas Ovechkubo. They'll round out that group. But in terms of other players, Connor Bunneman, Morgan Frost could push for more opportunities as well.
You know what? I said the defense was deep. The offense looks at least as deep, AJ, when you consider all the names that you threw out there. In Kevin Hayes' defense, I will say while he had a very subpar regular season, he was pretty good in the playoffs. I had him in a couple of my playoff pools, and while the Flyers didn't go a long way, he was quite productive while he was active. And so that's more the second-line pivot that they're looking for in Philadelphia over a full season. The depth at center affords them to play Claude Giroux, a longtime center, on the left wing and really fortify that flank. Looking for a comeback year from Oscar Lindblom could be one of the feel-good stories in the NHL should that come to pass. They're giving him every chance to look good by putting him on that first line. I think it might be a bit of a reach, and I might suggest you should expect to see maybe that left wing situation be a fluid one. Maybe Van Riemsdyk gets a look, Raffel gets a look, even Connor Bunneman had a bit of a cup of coffee last year with them. So keep an eye on that left side because it could move quite freely in the early going. Travis Konecny has seen a real steady rise in his fortunes and development as a pro and is a lock as the first line right wing. Behind him, it could be pretty fluid as well. Jakub Voracek is a guy they feature on the power play, longtime capable scorer on this club, used to be first line quality night in, night out without question, but won't be in that role this year with Konecny there, but certainly could be a top six guy behind Konecny. Joel Farabee, rugged guy, quick, smallish in stature, though, is a guy that is in that mix as well. Abe Kubel is a guy who is relatively unproven compared to those three, but also in the mix. So real good quality depth on the flanks. I love their situation at center with Couturier and Hayes, and I wonder what we can expect from Nolan Patrick. I know he was the subject of a bet between you and our longtime listener friend Daniel Negreanu out there on the left coast, and I wonder, we're all pulling for Patrick to get over the migraine disorder that has plagued his early career development. This guy was formerly a very high draft pick, I believe second overall in his draft year, AJ, and a lot was expected of him offensively. He's going to be well insulated in that third line role, but has a chance to really develop between the likes of Van Riemsdyk and Voracek the way it's laid out. They've got a lot of insurance in terms of the bottom nine players below the top nine, and the likes of Raffel and Lawton and Kubel should see some ice time among the top nine forwards at some point this season. I feel bad for a guy like Morgan Frost, another top draft pick in this mix, AJ, but he's ranked fifth on the depth chart at center. It might be best served for his development if he was traded elsewhere, because I just don't see how he's going to make his way up this roster depth chart with all the names and quality ahead of him on this lineup. But good news, good problem for Philadelphia to have. Finally, are you ready to talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins?
A whole host 29 other teams we had to talk about first, Paul.
A whole host of new faces. The first two have had some time in Toronto, so I'm familiar with Kasperi Kapanen at right wing, Cody Ceci on defense. They've also signed Colton Sevier, left wing, Michael Matheson on the blue line, Mark Jankowski at center, Radim Zohorna from the Czech League at right wing, and Jordan Nolan on the right wing as well. Come on, buddy, talk to me about the goaltending.
Well, it's you know, they invested their fortunes. They traded away Matt Murray, and so they are all in on Tristan Jarry at this point. Casey DeSmith, who for a while was expected to be the backup in a couple of previous seasons, will serve as the number two here finally. I would expect Jarry, again, 60 to 65 is where I would put that. They've invested in him as the number one. And Casey DeSmith, I think, is a solid number two, but this isn't a guy that I would project to ever develop into a number one netminder at any point here. So they'll use DeSmith as needed in terms of rest, but other than that, I think they're going to give Jarry a pretty heavy workload here.
That's it? That's all you got? I thought I was going to be able to have lunch with this first blurb about the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Well, but we're only talking about two guys, you know? I don't have to take up 40 minutes talking about, you know, Jarry and DeSmith.
Well, you got to be happy about that tandem, though. It's young guys with a high upside, both of them, and I think both have shown me in the early going of their careers that there is some quality there. So I think your net mining situation, while it's not the likes of your friend Marc-Andre Fleury there, the quality is there, in my opinion, and I think this helps them to stay a competitor in the high rent district of this division. So it would be a good idea if you could actually handcuff these guys if you're in that position in your fantasy leagues. A pretty good tandem to have, because Pittsburgh's going to rack up their share of wins, and one of these guys could emerge long term as one of the top 10 goalies in the league. I think that's the upside that both of them have in this mix, where there's a lot of quality in front of them, and some of that is on display on the back end, but more on the offensive side of the puck. But let's talk about that defense, AJ. Chris Letang once again comes back to be the linchpin of the offense from the back end. The longtime player in Penn's colors has been distinguished for the consistency of his offensive game, and I don't expect it to have a downturn this season either, as the quarterback of the power play. His partner in crime is Brian Dumoulin, who is more of a defensive specialist, so not featured in DFS lineups too often, even by you, I'll say. Mike Matheson is a guy who fortifies the depth offensively in this whole group of defensemen. He'll be partnered with John Marino on a very intriguing second pairing for me, which is more notable for the offensive capabilities that both of these guys have. And you can even add Marcus Pettersson as a fourth guy who's offensively capable, partnered with Cody Ceci, who's probably very well suited more in a third line pairing role as opposed to the first line minutes that he had with Morgan Riley last year in a season that was kind of a dreadful campaign for him, I'll say. But maybe you get a better performance out of him in a third line pairing where he doesn't have to worry about the offensive side of the game either, as long as he's got Marcus Pettersson beside him. So 1 through 6, intriguing possibilities here. 4 players with an offensive upside that you got to be feeling pretty good about.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like, Mike Matheson, Cody Ceci, both, for lack of a better term, reclamation projects after their season last year. And Pittsburgh brought back Todd Reirden, really, to handle the defense and hopefully make something out of it, kind of turn the careers around for these two guys. I think the interesting thing is, early in camp, it looked like Pettersson and Marino were going to stay together from last year, and Matheson and Ceci would make up the third pairing. But I think Matheson's just sheer speed, I think, suits playing with a guy like John Marino, who, look, at this point, they expect John Marino to be Chris Letang's heir apparent. Like, this is the guy that they are pegging to be the number one defenseman, I'll say, as early as maybe next season. I know Chris Letang's got 2 more years left on his contract, but I would not be shocked to see him finish out that deal with another team. And John Marino is a big reason why they'll have him take over eventually here on the top power play and be their number one guy. They signed him to a bit of a longer term deal. That's, right now maybe a little bit of an overpay, but on the back end will be very team friendly, and that's part of the future plans here. As far as the forward complement goes, there's a big loss right now, and that's Kasperi Kapanen, who was supposed to be the number one guy. He's at least back in Pittsburgh now, but because of visa issues, he's going to miss at least, it sounds like, the first 3 games while going through COVID protocols. And so Evan Rodriguez is your guy that will get to take on the first line role with Sidney Crosby and Jake Guentzel. Look, I think that is, as soon as Kapanen is ready, he will be back in that spot. And unfortunately for Rodriguez, I don't think that just means he drops down to the second line. I think when Kapanen's back, he could find himself on the outside looking in, because they really like some of the other lines that they've built here. He's definitely not disrupting the second line, that's for sure. That's going to be Jason Zucker, Evgeny Malkin, and Brian Rust, who has turned into a scoring threat the last couple of seasons, and really will pair up well. This is a line, again, hard to match up with, when that's your second line has to be going up against a line that I would say on maybe half the teams in the league would be a first line. I think that's a fair assessment to say Zucker, Malkin, and Russ could be a first line combination on at least half of the other teams. The question marks for this club come in the third line. And, Mark Jankowski, another guy I would term as a reclamation project. He had a good season like 2 years ago, but had a really kind of disappointing campaign last year. just 7 points in 56 games. And that was coming off having racked up career high 32 the year before that. So how he factors in, and can he kind of become a third line center for them? Jared McCann is going to move to the left wing. And then Brandon Tanev, who is a guy that they absolutely love, another speedster who his biggest talent is something that's not even, quantitative in terms of fantasy, but drawing penalties and getting the first line unit onto the first power play unit onto the ice, which is at this point going to feature Guentzel, Crosby, Malkin, and Rust in that group with Chris Letang. Fourth line is honestly pretty set right now in Colton Skeever, who they acquired as part of the Patrick Hornquist deal, the kind of throw-in piece, if you will, along with Mike Matheson. Teddy Bluger, who they absolutely love, and then Sam Lafferty has really pushed for a regular role. This is probably the only place, in my opinion, that Evan Rodriguez can challenge. Maybe a youngster like Lafferty has a few dips here or there. Maybe Colton Skeever on the other side. But yeah, I think things are pretty solid in this group, and I'll leave it at that, Paul. I won't continue on for the next hour here.
Dinner could have been served at the Bruno household. I was thinking, look at that. We already talked about 230 somethings on the Boston roster at center ice, but I'll take the tandem in Pittsburgh over the Bruin duo. No slight to the Bruins when you consider Crosby and Malkin as those two centers. There's no question in a lot of people's minds that they still exist as two very viable options among two of the best pivots in the entire league, so it's a real luxury for the Pens to have those two guys still in the prime of their careers. I don't see either of them slowing down yet by a long shot. And just the other day, Crosby was saying he doesn't even think about ending his days in the NHL yet. He's still in his early 30s and got a long way to go and to climb up the all-time scoring list. Something that I really keep an eye on more than most people, I guess, is why I bring that point up. But year after year, these guys are top scorers in this league, and they'll be that way again this season. And that's got to make you feel really good. And now they're starting to really build in around them. Jake Guentzel and Jason Zucker, two primetime snipers, the likes of which Crosby hasn't really seen, or Malkin even, on a steady basis outside of maybe Phil Kessel in the past. So real luxury for them to look on their left side and see those two guys there. And even on the right side, a capable scorer in Brian Rust, but Rodriguez, you're right, is a placeholder. As soon as Kapanen is healthy, he'll get a chance to be a first-line player. And he's where I want to start the discussion on the forwards really in depth, where I think this guy could be one of the top sleeper picks in the whole league. Now, even with his injury status too, it might scare some people off, but make no mistake, he's going to get a long look and every chance to succeed as the right winger on this top line. And if I'm going to have a caveat here, it's this. He's had a couple of chances as a top-line winger in Toronto. Didn't pan out for whatever reason. But when he looks at the likes of Crosby and Malkin, he's got to say to himself, I have a real chance here to play with elite players and really learn from them, particularly Crosby, who is one of the best leaders in hockey and one of the guys that you want to watch what this guy does to prepare himself for games. And that's where I think Kasperi Kapanen could really benefit, to really get himself to become a true pro hockey player. He's got lots of skill, AJ, but I just haven't seen him put it all together. And I think if Crosby takes him under his wing, literally, he can really help get the most out of him, and that's when you're going to get good value. So I'm trying to get you excited about a guy who couldn't crack the top six in Toronto but has every chance to do it in Pittsburgh. And I, for one, wish him luck. He seems like a good guy, and I want to see what is his ceiling. We're going to get a chance to find out here in Pittsburgh. Rounding out the group, Jared McCann is a guy you didn't really talk about too much. I think he's a guy that will bounce around your lineup. He's played top 6 minutes before. He's played in the center position before. So if Jankowski doesn't work out, I can see McCann moving over to the center position. Jankowski, for his part, was a guy that they waited on in Calgary for years, but it didn't really turn out that well for him there, so he's hoping to light up his trajectory again in Pittsburgh. And another guy, I think the same thing that I said about Kapanen could apply to him. This guy can really learn from the two guys ahead of him on the depth chart. If he fails in that mission, a guy like Teddy Bluger moves up in class. So some really great options that Pittsburgh has in terms of the depth chart. You mentioned Colton Sevier is another guy, and Sam Lafferty. They are listed as fourth line players, but I think it's a fluid situation in Pittsburgh with some real good quality here. So you should be pretty excited about that team for sure. The final team we're going to look at is the Washington Capitals. We mentioned Henrik Lundqvist off the earlier in the show. He was a key signing they felt in the offseason, would have been a really nice compliment to their starter in the Nets, but of course lost for the season after his heart surgery, and maybe he's done in terms of the campaign. Zdeno Chara, a recent signing that of note, bolsters a defense in Washington, and I think you're going to see him have another solid season anchoring this defense. We'll get into the depth chart there in a bit. They also added a couple more veterans on the blue line. They really went to work in the offseason to fortify that group. Justin Schultz, Trevor Van Riemsdyk, Paul Ledoux, all have played even top 4 minutes in the NHL in the past. Cameron Schilling, more of a depth option, and a guy that they had to bring in on a PTO who probably fits in the goalie depth chart at some point is Craig Anderson. I think he's 38 years of age, AJ, and that's probably the same as Henrik Lundqvist. Not the quality of goalie that Lundqvist is by reputation, but certainly a pretty steady one should he make the grade. But there's other options there we'll get to in a sec. Rounding out the other additions of note, Daniel Carr, Daniel Sprong, and Connor Sheary. The last name there is intriguing for me to see where he fits in the line. We'll get that assessment going very shortly. But let's talk about the goalie mix in Philly. I mean, Washington, it's going to have a different look this year.
Absolutely. And so Ilya Samsonov projects to be their number one guy. And then Videk Vanecek will be the number two. They came out yesterday and said that's going to be the tandem. And so I think what they're going to do is they're going to sign Craig Anderson here off that PTO and then have him be their taxi squad goalie. And I think the benefit here is, again, I talked about this previously, is having a veteran guy who's around the team, who's at practice, that can kind of guide Samsonov and Vanecek in terms of, you know, NHL play and everything. But it will be Samsonov, I would say 55 pushing to 60% of the starts, Vanecek the others. Obviously, if an injury comes up, Craig Anderson could get a handful here. But for the most part, I think, again, another guy that'll be a veteran and potentially serve as an extra goalie coach for them.
Yeah, I have hopes for Anderson fitting into this mix too, because putting it in the hands of two very young goalies here, it's a team that still wants to threaten for the cup and figures to be among the contenders in this division. So they want to have a veteran insurance there, but I think you're right. They're handing over the reins to Samsonov. He should get the lion's share of the goaltending situation. I question whether Vanecek should be the second guy. I'd like to see Anderson in that role, so we'll see how that shakes out. But AJ, in front of them, they have a different-looking defense. Carlson is going to be in the Norris conversation again, one of the top offensive defensemen in hockey, the number one guy last year, in fact. Partnered with Dmitry Orlov, who has an offensive upside to his game, but is a very fluid skater, a good defensive guy as well. Good foil for Carlson overall. Brendan Dillon will fill in the same defensive responsibilities alongside Justin Schultz, who might be the secondary option in terms of scoring from the back end. I mentioned the addition of Zdeno Chara. He's going to play some special teams, a lot of penalty killing work for him, but also maybe featured on the odd power play circumstance with that big shot, big presence, and he'll be partnered with Nick Jensen, who has to be the happiest guy in the NHL, saying, "I won't get any trouble at all on the ice as long as Big Z's alongside me," a veteran defenseman who's bounced around the league and gives him an experienced look on that third pairing. Trevor Van Riemsdyk and Jonas Siegenthaler are veteran guys who would fill out the depth chart of most NHL teams quite capably on a third pairing. So that's the insurance that they have there. Michael Kempney would have been a candidate for a top role here, but he's on the IR. And Martin Favreri is a depth option, a young guy that they're bringing along. So they have 10 pieces on the back end that make up, all told, a pretty nice-looking defensive group.
The player to watch for me is Justin Schultz, and I imagine he'll quarterback the second power play unit. But as you said, you know, maybe Chara gives a few looks here or there with that, or they put both of them out there. That's certainly possible. But Schultz definitely won't be manning the number one unit. That's for sure. Again, the only way he would get on that number one unit is if they decided to put two defensemen out there. But if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And that power play has been churning along pretty well with, you know, just the one defenseman. So Schultz, a player to watch, but I don't know that he's going to produce like the same quality of numbers that he has in the past couple of seasons. You know, last year, just 12 points with Pittsburgh. The year before, just 15. Now his games have been limited due to injuries. But I definitely don't think we're going to see him at that, you know, 51-point rate that he was that first full season in Pittsburgh. I would expect that rate will be down a little bit, especially without that power play responsibility. Forward combinations, at least the top six, look pretty similar to what we're used to here. Alexander Ovechkin on that left wing. I don't think they're bumping him down anytime soon. Nicholas Backstrom as the center. TJ Oshie on the right wing. Tom Wilson for the second line with Evgeny Kuznetsov and Jakub Vrána. There's some movement that could happen there. I know they've used Wilson on the top instead of Oshie from time to time. But personally, I like Oshie better in that spot. He's definitely a goal scorer for sure. So that gives Backstrom plenty of options on where to move the puck. He can move it to Ovechkin like he's expected to. But if teams are, you know, really heavy on Ovechkin defensively, then it gives him Oshie on the other side. And I think having him there will create more opportunities for Ovechkin than if Tom Wilson were in that role. That's just my take on it. Third line, you're looking at Richard Panik, Lars Eller. And then this is where I think Connor Sherry fits in here. And I think he'll be, a good fit here, but it's tenuous at best. I think there's plenty of guys that'll challenge here. Garnett Hathaway is one of those players. Daniel Sprong is another. But right now, Hathaway on the fourth line with Nick Dowd and Carl Hagelin. And Hagelin's another player that could push for third. So as solid, I think you've got basically two groups on this team. There could be some movement, but I think you've basically got the top six. Those will be the top six guys, and you've got the bottom six. Maybe injuries could change that up, but I don't see a lot of the bottom six guys pushing for top six roles here.
Yeah, I like your assessment there. The only caveat I'll add is maybe Connor Sherry. I think he has some upside to his game offensively, and if Wilson falters in any way, shape, or form, he's been playing top 6 minutes the last couple of years in Washington. I don't foresee that changing, but if they did want to take a look at Sherry, I think he's a capable guy that might fit into that right wing on one of the top two scoring lines should that opportunity arise. So maybe a guy that you stash in the hopes that he gets that opportunity and you get a bit of a payoff if he gets the role long term. Lars Eller, really well cast as the third line center here, is a really good puck distributor. And Richard Panik, also good insurance should Vrána go down or slump. He's a guy that could move up in class as well. So they have options on the third line that could threaten the top six or really insulate in terms of injury issues. Carl Hagelin, a real luxury to have this guy on the fourth line, another guy who fits that same mold. Garnet Hathaway, they're looking for this youngster to take the next step, but I, like you, don't see too many opportunities or ways for him to move up in class. That just tells you the quality that they have in terms of the depth chart here. AJ, this figures to me to be one of the tightest division, 1 through 6, I'll say, in terms of rating the teams. So if we got your favorite team in 6, don't think it's because we slight them. It's just because they're so deep. And I think earlier on in the show, we both had Philadelphia rated lower than we do now. I'm curious to know where you put them when you rank the division 1 through 8.
Yeah, and maybe I just don't want to do this. It goes against every fiber of my being. But when you look at this team objectively, and we talked about, oh, we love the defense. Oh, they're really deep at forward and have some great stuff. Their net minding is maybe one of the best, if not the best in the division. I think you have to put them at the top. I think there's too many things going well for them. So I have Philadelphia winning the division over Washington. I think on the strength of their forward depth, I think is where they get there. Pittsburgh comes in third for me. The third line is a little, as I said, a bit of a question mark in how that shakes out. And so that's why I have them a little bit lower. I can't believe I'm putting Boston fourth in this division, but I have to remind myself that this isn't the old Atlantic where Boston and Tampa just battled it out for the top spot. They're playing some harder teams here. They've had some losses on the blue line. So Boston comes in at fourth for me, which also has me boggling my mind. Like, leaving a Barry Trotz coach team out of the playoffs also doesn't make sense. But I have the Rangers at 5 and then the Islanders at 6, which, again, as I said, the Barry Trotz team being on the outside looking in is surprising to me as well. Buffalo at 7, you know, there's some concerns there, but Taylor Hall on that team, I think they could, it's possible they could move up from there, but again, just so deep. I think the only thing I'm certain about with this division is that New Jersey will come in 8th. That's about the only thing that I feel very confident in saying here. But that's where I went for now.
Yeah, and you know what? Up till a couple of minutes ago, I was looking exactly the same as you. I kept Washington in the top spot just because of the pedigree of that offense. And I like the fact that they have Carlson on the anchoring a defense that looks pretty solid to me. And the goalie mix is a fine one when you consider the top guy there, Samsonov, ready to reach the upper echelon of netminders in the league. So I'll leave the Caps where I had them beginning of the show in first place. Philadelphia, for me, moves up into second place. As you suggest, we look at this team as a team without real weakness, and that challenges the Penguins to battle them. And I think the Penguins wind up third in this division as well. And it leaves me in the same quandary as you, thinking Boston Bruins 4th. But that's as high as I think the Bruins can go in this division. They may even take a bit of a downturn if the top two pivots, who I said are a little long in the tooth and not the quality of the same guys in Pittsburgh. Maybe Boston does take a dip and allow the Rangers or the Islanders to surpass them. But right now, I've got the two New York-based teams, 5th and 6th, like you do, and then a bit of a gap before we get to Buffalo and another gap before we get to New Jersey. So all in all, pretty similar look from you and me, AJ. We're one more sleep away from the start of the NHL season. Have you got any final thoughts before we sign off today?
I mean, other than to just be excited to really dive into it and start, getting into the hockey. And, I the one thing I'll mention, if you haven't had your draft tonight, I have one tonight. I am very high on taking a goalie in the first round. I think a lot of people are underselling the fact that, you know, there are only a handful of elite options. I had the 10th overall pick in a what I'll call like an analyst league. And I took Connor Hellebuyck, 10th overall. And just before him at 8th went Vasilevskiy. So if your draft is tonight, if you're a last minute draft, do not sleep on taking one of those guys early. I just think they're too good. They're too far removed from the rest of the group, especially in the number of games that they're going to play. I would have been willing to go upwards of 5. I would have taken it. If I had the 5th overall pick, I would have taken a goalie. I don't think I would go as crazy as passing on the likes of MacKinnon, Draisaitl, or McDavid if I had a top 3 pick to take one of those goalies. But know that you probably aren't getting them then, and you're going to have to maybe at the end of the second round scramble for somebody. In my opinion, that's what I see.
Yeah, I think that's a decent tip, AJ, one that I might subscribe to as well, but I agree with you. You can't pass up on the 3 or 4 elite options offensively. I might even throw Artemi Panarin in the mix of the top 4 scorers in the league that I would rate before I'd take any goalie. And leaning on goalies, I would look at a guy like a Connor Hellebuyck or Tampa's Vasilevskiy as the first two options that I would consider in the Nets to go in that first round alongside some of the shooters. AJ, we're also going to talk more DFS going forward when we get into the serious shooting on our next show. But we've gone through all the divisions in our season preseason previews, and we hope that our listeners have enjoyed this. But we're going to get into the nuts and bolts of the regular season campaign when we next talk. Each of the several teams will have played 3 games, and I can't wait to talk about that. So a great place to stop. That wraps up this episode of Puckcast with Statsman and AJ, RotoWire's signature fantasy hockey podcast. Join us next week as we finally get to talk about the real games that are being played, hopefully. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm Paul Bruno at Statsman22, and you can follow AJ at AJSchulz24. As always, we invite you to listen into podcasts to get our tips to stay out of the competition in your fantasy hockey planning and research. And don't forget, you can now watch us on YouTube. So long, everybody.